from deep inside your radio.
From the cradle of liberty and the grave of airport convenience as we know it, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Harry Scherer with a question, actually an observation first, then a question in the form of an answer. What? Is this a radio program or a... Yes, it is. You may have noticed this week that CBS announced their schedule changes, as all the networks did in their vaunted upfront presentations. These are kind of where the networks revert to show business one time a year, basically to entertain their potential advertisers, who are much harder to please than we are, clearly by the level of entertainment they're offered, which is much better than what we're offered, which the networks are bragging about to the advertisers. You get me? So CBS announced that among the shows it was canceling in its drive to buttress its number one position in the ratings, was 60 Minutes Wednesday. 60 Minutes Wednesday. The program, of course, had achieved notoriety last year during the election campaign when it was the broadcast that featured the report based on questionable documents about President Bush's National Guard service, the report that triggered an investigation, led to Dan Rather's premature, some would say, resignation as anchor of the CBS Evening News and his reassignment to 60 Minutes Wednesday, which, to reiterate, has now been canceled. Les Moonves, the always candid president of CBS, who, by the way, admitted the week's greatest quote, explaining why he canceled Joan of Arcadia, a show about a woman who was in contact with God, and scheduled a program featuring, is it Jennifer Love Hewitt, as somebody who talks to dead people. Moonves, whose explanation for every move he made in programming the fall schedule was that he wanted the network to appeal to younger viewers. He explained that dead people skew younger than God. You don't write these. One just tries to remember and repeat them. So his reason for why 60 Minutes Wednesday went down the hole was that it had the oldest audience on CBS. And they just got a young up. Now, what's going on here? Well, just to pull the threads of this sweater a little bit. Advertisers want to reach audiences within the range of 18 to 49, generally, and on Fox and NBC specifically, those networks brag about reaching audiences 18 to 34. What's the reason that those are the most attractive audiences to advertisers? It's based on years and years of research, which have since been discredited, largely, that says that people in those age groups are the most amenable to advertising to convince them to change brands. That people over that age tend to be set in their ways, have their brand preferences set in stone, and no amount of advertising can convince them, so why bother? As I say, there has been research that has discredited this theory lately, but my feeling is that more needs to be done, ladies and gentlemen, and that's where you come in. I'm presuming, I have no idea who listens to this broadcast, how many of you there are, or what demographic profile you fit. And I like it that way. But let's just assume for the sake of argument that some of the people who listen to this broadcast are people over the age of 49. Possible. If you'd like the media and cultural landscape to reflect more closely your tastes and desires and less slavishly reflect those of the age groups currently preferred by advertisers, it seems to me there's one thing you can do. Convince advertisers that you change brands too. Now, I know it's hard. I I was dragged kicking and screaming into another toothpaste recently. And I realized, hey, they're all the same. It's just a different kind of fake sweetness. A major realization, ladies and gentlemen. You can make it too. Just change your brand of something every week and let the companies know it. At some point, they got to figure out, hey, oh, and tell them your age, by the way. Hey, these older folks are switching brands. We ought to put on programs for them. And we'll get Dan back on 60 Minutes Wednesday. Just you wait and see. I have a phone call here. It's interesting. All right, we'll take this one and get on with the broadcast. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Sharir.
Yes.
Well...
Shop?
I was wondering how long it would take you. Well, yes, of course.
Yeah.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine, and of course it takes as long as it takes. For those of you, ladies and gentlemen, who don't recognize the caller's voice, this is Shab,
yes.
An individual that we, I guess, began speaking to periodically in the run-up to the Iraq War.
That's
who
right.
Was, had a very successful career as a Saddam Hussein look-alike
until
things happened, but still has a comfortable living, I understand,
well,
as a...
high-end... Stereo.
A retailer of high-end stereo equipment
in
modern-day Baghdad, and still has been working as a Saddam lookalike in children's birthday parties, things like that. How are you, Shamshan?
I'm upset.
Really?
Mr. Sharir, very upset about the photographs of Saddam Hussein that have appeared in the Rupert Murdoch press in Britain and your country.
Well, whoever.
The Saddam in his underpants photos.
Mm-hmm.
These are very distressing to me, sir.
Really?
Yes.
Because you're offended by the disrespect shown to the former tyrant?
No, sir. Mm. I don't care what they do to him in the privacy of his cell.
Well.
But you put these pictures on the front pages of newspapers all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
It is inevitable that people in Iraq are going to see these photographs.
I guess.
And it is inevitable the consequences that are going to ensue.
Are you talking about the kind of riots that we saw in the wake of the Newsweek report on Quran flushing in Afghanistan?
No, sir. Mm. Afghanis can riot if they so choose. They have rebuilt their society. They have security. They have electricity. I don't know what they have.
Well,
but if they feel free to riot, they are not in this situation. No, we do not have the luxury of that, sir.
I
am talking about other consequences, much more serious for persons like myself.
Such as
when I'm the high-end stereo business in Iraq is in the toilet. Forget about the Quran in the toilet. The high-end stereo business is there. There's no room for Quran in there. There's nobody is buying because there's no electricity to listen to. Wait, you have high-end stereo equipment. It makes good furniture. It makes a good place to put the trash newspapers we have here these days. That's all you can do with it.
Yes,
of course I'm going out and trying to get work as a Tom lookalike, parties and events and so forth, marriages and honeymoons where, oh, look, honey, Saddam is here, and things like that.
Yeah.
Good fun. But now people have seen Saddam in his underwear.
Mm-hmm.
They see how he looks. They see his body. They see the exaggerated breasts that look almost female.
I noticed that.
It is an embarrassment to the male figure of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then people look at me and they say, this cannot be Saddam.
Mm.
He has male breasts.
Mm-hmm.
His chest is sunken like the rest of us.
Mm.
This is not Saddam. This is some poor lookalike trying to make a living because he cannot sell his high-end
stereo
equipment or whatever they say.
So you feel that this is impacting negatively on your business?
No, I don't feel it. I know it.
Ah.
I've met with others, with over 20, 30 of us Saddam lookalikes in the golden days.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet, we have coffee, we discuss, and we all say, this is a problem. We know what is going on here. People are being distracted by these pictures, these photographs of this so-called real Saddam, and they don't want to look at us anymore. They want to see just more pictures. It's tragic for us, Mr. Sharia.
No, I understand. Shab, you said something. You said the so-called real Saddam.
Yes, I said that. So we know who this is. What? This is not Saddam Hussein, the former president of Iraq.
It's not.
Do you think the Americans are so stupid as to show photographs of his real condition, Mr. Scherer?
Well,
we know what his real condition is. It's not something you'd find appetizing in photographic representation.
Well,
no, this is we know who this is. This is Ali Wazil. He's one of us. He was a Saddam lookalike who was always using whatever tactics he could use to get work away from the rest of us. And we know he's a bodybuilder.
Mm.
He's been working on his pecs. And it's so obvious what's going on here. He's just trying to screw the rest of us. Is that how you say it?
Screw the rest
of us out of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's Ali Wazil's revenge, Mr. Scherer. It is so unfair.
Ali Wazil's revenge.
Yes.
So the Murdoch newspapers got... fooled by Ali Wazil?
Whatever they did, Mr. Scherer, all I ask you to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know Mr. Murdoch. You work for him. Ask him, please. He believes in free enterprise.
Well,
that's all we're trying to do is reconstruct the Iraqi private economy one lookalike appearance at a time.
Uh-huh.
Please not to print any more of these photographs.
Uh-huh.
They are false. They are fraudulent. They just enrich Ali Wazil and do nothing for the rest of us. Please, you have this influence.
Well, I do want to correct one thing. It's Shearer.
All right.
Shab, yep. I will do what I can.
Good.
Obviously, I'm a man of immense influence,
yeah.
And I will try to wield it either for evil or for good.
All
Thanks
right.
for the call. Thanks for the update. Thanks for the world exclusive.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, a look back at the first half of this year, the apologies of the week, and dog trainer corrections, all coming up on Hello, Welcome to the Show. Yeah, some fine corrections from the dog trainer this week, starting with Tuesday. An article in Sunday's California section on Los Angeles' search for a new planning director said that, quote, at nearly 470 square miles, L.A. is so massive that Boston, Chicago, and the five boroughs of New York City could fit within the city's boundaries with room left for a Solvang or two, unquote. In fact, the cumulative square miles of New York, Chicago, Boston, and Solvang is about 600, making it larger than Los Angeles. Also, a map that accompanied the article labeled a proposed city center east of Beverly Hills as Century City. The Century City Center is west of Beverly Hills. Al Martinez's column in Friday's calendar section said Tom Hayden was with Jane Fonda in Hanoi when she was photographed at a North Vietnamese anti-aircraft gun emplacement in 1972. Hayden did visit North Vietnam four times during the war, but he wasn't with Fonda at that time. A photo caption in Friday's California section about an article about donors in the Los Angeles mayor's race said Mayor James K. Hahn was endorsed by a neighborhood council. It did not endorse Hahn. Neighborhood councils as a group cannot endorse candidates. An article in Sunday's California section about a protest over a public monument in Baldwin Park said the event was announced on the John and Ken show on KFI. The monument was discussed on several talk shows, but not the John and Ken show. An article in Sunday's Section A identified Sylvester Scheiber as a member of President Bush's 2001 Social Security Commission. In fact, he was a member of President Clinton's 1994-98 Social Security Advisory Council. The photo of a 1966 Bruno Mali sandal that accompanied the Fashion Notes column in Saturday's calendar section was credited to Bruno Mali. The credit belongs to Arthur Barron. In a Sunday sports column about the Lakers' search for a new coach, the time difference between Los Angeles and Italy was reported as 11 hours. It is 9 hours. Well, how are you supposed to know that? Where could you go look that up? Please. A May 12th article in the business section about the conversion of half an office building in downtown to condominium said it was the first such office residential high-rise building in downtown Los Angeles. In fact, Bunker Hill Tower, a condominium tower downtown, built in 1968, has office and retail space. A May 11th article, hey, 1968 is so recent. It's like in dog... Oh, a May 11th article in Section A about possible military base closing said that the Los Angeles Air Force Base's airspace was hemmed in by residential and commercial buildings in El Segundo, implying that aircraft take off and land at the base. In fact, the base is a complex of buildings and has no runways. The primetime preview chart in Tuesday's calendar section said the NBC series The Office would be moving to the 9:30 to 10 p.m. Tuesday slot in the fall. In fact, that's the time slot in which the program was airing most recently. An article in Monday's California section about shootings in Long Beach said there had been 22 officer-involved shootings in the last 1.5 years. In fact, there were 22 shootings in the last 2.5 years. In some copies of today's calendar section, this is a few days ago, a headline on an article about Oakland Mayor Jerry Brown says he will marry June 9th. His wedding is actually scheduled for June 18th. An article in Sunday Section A about the final days of the Los Angeles mayor's race said that City Councilman Antonio Villaraigosa is 55 years old. He is 52. Again, where are you supposed to get that? They've got daily deadlines to meet, ladies and gentlemen. Are they supposed to run around and try to fact check somebody's age all of a sudden? And finally, an article in Friday's calendar section about the movie Flyboys said that Bryan Singer is a co-founder of the marketing company Voltage Pictures. In fact, he is not. Also, the clip of Flyboys shown at Cannes was from 3 weeks of shooting, not 3 days. And the movie Librarian 2, Return to King Solomon's Mines, was referred to incorrectly as Librarian 2, Revenge of King Solomon's Mines. Those mines can exact a terrible revenge, ladies and gentlemen. I understand how you can make a mistake like that when you're the Los Angeles dog trainer. Corrections for you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as mentioned, Dan Rather's new place of employment, 60 Minutes, Wednesday, is closing up shop. Reminds one of Dan having to move out of Black Rock when he left the Evening News just a couple of months ago.
He's feeding the package in about 10 minutes. We should be able to... Hold on. Yes, Mr. Rather? Do you need something?
Yes, I do. Please, Roberta. Do you folks out here in the bullpen have any more packing boxes? I'm 5 cartons into an 8 carton job.
Yeah, there's only one of me here right now, but as soon as I get this piece screened for broadcast, I'll see if...
Daniel! I've
been meaning to call you. Michael, sir, please, nothing to say. Nothing to call about. Whether you watch me or Brother Brokaw, it's no skin off an armadillo's trousers, sir. You are not the target demographic, Hoss. Sorry to break it to you, but thanks, Roberta. There was a time, Brother Wallace, when that young lady would drop the phone double pronto quick to get me a packing box.
Well, it was probably a time when you didn't need packing boxes, Brother Rather. So why in heaven's name would you be here on a Sunday before your last Wednesday?
Come on in, Michael. No hard feelings.
Well, I've got to revoice a 60 gazinza, but...
Come on.
All right. Jesus. This is pretty amazing.
Yes, sir. For the first time since 1982... The safari jacket is packed away. Only thing hanging on these walls tonight are the pushpins.
Look, Daniel, I'm not going to BS you and say that Ken Arletta misquoted me in the New Yorker when I said that you're not as watchable as Jennings or Brokaw.
No, sir, I know you better than that. Yeah. You're boxed spaghetti straight. That's what gave that quote its $2 wallop. In a $3 world. Yes, sir, on the money.
Look, Daniel, my friend, I've always known your heart was in the right place. Well, we've all had to make our compromises with the suits. You just made different ones than the ones I would have if I'd had to, which I still am fortunate enough not to.
Gotcha, Hoss. Look, Michael, everybody's got opinions. They're easier to come by than tetanus in Thailand. What we have in common, sir... is a dedication to something people on outside of this building like to scoff at.
Well, they like to scoff at everything inside of this building.
You and me, sir, man to man and boot to loafer, we still remember why we came to this place and what we came to do. And we can still do it. You know, you're still doing it on 60, and I can certainly help cement that broadcast's reputation.
Daniel, friendly note, this probably isn't the best time for you to use cement and reputation in the same sentence.
Point well taken, sir, please. And yet, truth be told and damn the hindmost, we're not slinking away our tails between our legs.
No, sir, and I applaud you for that.
We're still doing the tough stories, the reality checks, the money minutes.
Yeah, well, they're doing that 1-hour retrospective on you.
Yes, sir.
Of course, Brokaw got a two-hour...
And I know you haven't been watching, partner, but in the last week I've gone back to introducing our commercial pods. First, please, these messages.
Mm-hmm. I remember the bit.
I'm a guest in someone's home. Salesman's gonna follow me in. I owe my hosts a common courtesy of an introduction.
Oh, you're right, Daniel, you do.
Mm-hmm.
Look, as to 60,
yep.
Obviously there are people even more overpaid than we are who get to decide about all that. You know that when and or if you come aboard, your problems will come from Brother Safer, but certainly not from me.
I appreciate that, sir. That's first crocus warm and next whiskey welcome. A lot of memories in here.
Well, they got a floor manager on overtime. I should get out there.
Well, see you at the 60 Minutes picnic.
We stopped having those 10 years ago. Budget cuts. So long, Daniel.
Yes, sir. A lot of memories in here. And in this box, too.
Memories are like rivers, Brother Rather. They both have banks.
Brother Corrald, I didn't see you come back to life.
Oh, I know you've been talking to Ed Murrow from time to time in here.
Well, not to be humping hound rude, but Charles, that's who I was expecting. I mean, cards on the table and legs on the floor. Ed Murrow's the only dead person I'm in contact with. So,
well, you know his schedule. He's spinning these days till at least 7, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. There's a special kind of poignancy about an office, isn't there, inside this big impersonal building is a kind of a mountain shack.
Mm-hmm.
We spend half our working lives trying to make it like home, and the other half trying to go home.
All very well crafted stuff, Charlie, but I guess I'm a little too emotional right now for sentiment.
Daniel, it's been a long, slow ride from Houston, Texas to Houston Street, New York, and we're not there yet.
Oh, no, sir, Charlie. Let's don't count Dan Rather out just yet. There's still a good few rounds left in his chamber. Care for a tic-tac?
No, thanks, Daniel. Not really concerned about my breath anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a man we once filmed down in Cullen Corners, Kentucky. He played the bass mandolin every day for 53 years because he cared too much. He wasn't too fond of the Jews, but...
And you're saying I'm like that man... That I'm leaving 1 year early and one retrospective hour short because, like him, I cared too much.
Oh, he couldn't stand the sight of them.
Charlie?
Brother Corrald had to go tape some promos. That's the weird thing about being deceased. We still have to cut promos.
Brother Reasoner? Well, it's been a long time.
Daniel, at least. I got to be around for the... first 3 rounds of budget cuts.
So Murrow really isn't coming tonight?
Last I heard, Brother Rather, he's on assignment.
Hmm.
But having toiled in the vineyards of 60 over the years, I thought I had some possibly not too conventional wisdom to impart.
Well, go ahead, sir, please.
Brother Safer is an old lion. You need to get the thorn out of his paw. My suggestion would be a case of a first-growth Bordeaux, but, you know, that's up to your assistant. But just keep in mind, Morley feels insulted by second-growths.
No, I remember how he used to look down his nose at my Diet Dr. Pepper. That's a good suggestion, Brother Reasoner.
I mean, look, Daniel, you may not want to fit in there. I know I wouldn't. I mean, when I was at 60 Minutes, the secretaries wore the earrings, not the anchors.
Well, in fairness, Leslie Stahl is always...
I mean, Ed Bradley.
Yes, sir, Brother Bradley.
What's the message he's sending with that? Or do I want to know?
Sir, there are network presidents who wear an earring when they meet with talent and take it off when they huddle with the suits. Maybe Brother Bradley regards the audience as talent.
As for Andy Rooney, he loves antique watches.
And what's Leslie Stahl's preferred china pattern? I mean, Brother Reasoner, if I didn't know better, I'd swear you were running some kind of bridal registry for 60 Minutes anchors.
Hey, look, Daniel. Being dead is bad enough without having to endure withering sarcasm.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Please. This is an emotional time for me. I've got three more chances to say, reporting for CBS News on live television, and then only our fearless leader knows. I'm going to miss this place, Harry.
Sure you will, Dan.
I'm going to miss the smell of... Well, we don't have grease paint. We don't have ink. What does this place smell of? Smells like a room full of computers. And, Harry? Well, I should understand cut quick and paper cut deep. The hardest thing in the world for a broadcaster is to sign off. That and a pay cut. But...
Mr. Rather, your boxes will be up here in about 15.
Thanks, Roberta. From the bottom of my heart.
Sure, don't mention it.
Ladies and gentlemen, as mentioned, CBS had a very successful season this year. But one of their low points, aside from 60 Minutes Wednesday, was a special, I guess it was a two-part kind of movie, kind of TV movie kind of deal that they ran a couple of weekends ago about Elvis. Elvis Presley? Wasn't quite the ratings blockbuster that I think CBS was expecting. And there were a lot of... Well, there wasn't a lot. There was some discussion about why. My personal opinion is that apparently the show focused on his early days as, you know, his climb up and his early success. Didn't focus on the later days, the bloated days in Vegas. And most crucially, I think, for ratings, did not focus on the end of the story, something we focus on musically next here on the show.
Well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? I've been riding this pole since 2:45. I used to be as frisky as a 20-pound pup. I know, look at me, I'm all back up. I'm all back up. I'm all back up. Can eat my feet from the west of the rim when I'm all back up.
All back up.
This is LeShow from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, home of LeShow for this week. And ladies and gentlemen, this is Donald Trump talking about his plan to build a new version of the World Trade Center towers at the site of the World Trade Center towers rather than the Freedom Tower that had been approved after a long and lengthy period of consideration by the authorities in New York City. Here's Donald Trump.
If we rebuild the World Trade Center in the form of a skeleton, Freedom Tower, the terrorists win. Simply put, the terrorists win. It's that bad.
Gee, it's almost like Osama bin Laden was the architect of the Freedom Tower, if it's that bad. Ladies and gentlemen, this is an argument that's going to be going on for a while, the way things do in New York. There's one way to cut through all this.
Every week, Casey, Corey, and Carla take just a someplace and turn it into a real someplace else. Come on and watch as they embark on another madcap marathon of redesign on deadline. We're Exchanging Solids.
This is our biggest project of all, and it's not easy to get a mayor out of town.
Especially when the mayor is Mike Bloomberg and the town is New York.
Well, fortunately, he's got a fundraiser in White Sulphur Springs.
Or at least he thinks he does.
Yeah, there actually aren't any donors anywhere near the resort.
Mm-mm. But by the time he figures that out, we'll be well on our way. Hey, we've only got 3 days to redo the World Trade Center site.
So, let's get way busy. It's a bustling city, but nobody bustles harder than the Exchanging Solids team. First, we had to decide how to design the space.
It'd be cool to have a mixed-use, mid-sized tower here, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but we want that street to cut through the site and reestablish the historic grid, don't we?
Cement cutters!
Watch your fingers.
I will, if you watch yours.
I'll pour the asphalt.
Cool. That'll give me time to get the striping machine.
Dude. Now I know why this is usually a union gig.
Now, call me a girl, but I think we need some shopping.
You're a girl.
And we don't do malls.
But what about an outdoor bazaar under a way cool awning?
Outdoor shopping?
Sweet!
Awning question?
Yeah.
Striped or solid?
Woo. I vote striped. Way festive.
Yeah, but solid is easier to work with.
Where did it say this is supposed to be easy? Meanwhile, the clock was ticking on that mid-sized mixed-use tower. Corey had designed a Japanese-style open platform tower, and Casey was cladding it in a spackled drop cloth. But wouldn't you know it?
Uh-oh. The spackling gun's blocked.
Ugh.
This is gonna throw us so off.
Well, I could try hand-spackling it as soon as I finish with this transit tunnel.
Yeah, but if there's no tower...
We don't need a tunnel. Hi, Mom. I'm spackling.
We decided on a one-acre memorial park, so Casey spent that night sodding the ground, while Corey got up early and gathered children's drawings of the Twin Towers from 30 schools. And that afternoon, there I was, stapling them to the masonite wall of memory that I sank into the ground on piano legs.
Gee, 7 hours to go.
Uh-huh.
We've got a pretty cool-looking mega-parcel here.
Yeah. You know, as far as I can see, we've only forgotten one thing. Hey, the papier-mâché curbings were set an hour ago.
Yeah, but...
Signage.
Hey, Casey, that's not how you spell interborough.
It is now.
Well, the mayor's back. And he's looking at the project for the first time.
And? Well, I wish I could run my whole administration like this. But seriously, you did get permits for all this.
We sure did. Mm-hmm. From the Food Channel.
Enough said.
So, you like it?
Well, it'll take a little getting used to. That's a yes.
Well, that's this week's show. Next time, join us in historic Venice, Italy. We're going to redesign it to stop the sinking. And we're going to do it in just 72 hours.
That's next time on Exchanging Solids.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week, beginning with the most famous one of all this week.
We're so sorry.
There are a number of allegations still in the air. We're sorry that this specific incident apparently turned out not to be accurate, and we are deeply sorry. We've run a very long, transparent piece about how our news gathering worked in this particular case and did not work, and we are very sorry that it was used by very radical elements in beginning in Afghanistan to such a terrible end.
Triply sorry, the editor of Newsweek. Not sorry enough for the White House. They're almost as tough to satisfy with an apology as I am. Ladies and gentlemen, Mexico City. After a scolding from north of the border, President Vicente Fox said he regretted any hurt feelings over a comment he made about blacks in the United States. But many Mexicans insist Americans overreacted. Yeah, that's right. That's why they call us Americans. In a speech Friday, Fox praised the dedication of Mexicans working in the United States, saying they're willing to take jobs that, quote, even blacks won't do. State Department spokesman Richard Boucher called the remark very insensitive and inappropriate. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton called on Fox to apologize. At first, the Mexican president refused, saying his remark had been misinterpreted, but after a weekend of mounting criticism and telephone conversations with Jackson and Sharpton, Fox said he regretted any hurt feelings and has great respect for the African-American community in the United States. Yes, phone conversations with Jackson and Sharpton could fill you with great respect. TV reporter Arthur Chen was canned by WCBS-TV in New York after he shouted the F-word at two meddlers who horned in on his live telecast. In the news, he was in the middle of a 6 a.m. broadcast about subway scammers when two men sneaked up behind him with a sign promoting satellite radio shock jocks Opie and Anthony. For a few moments, as they heckled him and gave the finger to the camera, Chen kept his cool and continued talking. But as soon as he finished his report, he spun around and shouted at the intruders, "What the F is your problem, man?" The expletive went out over the air. "Sorry about that distraction before," Chen said when he returned. The apology apparently wasn't enough for WCBS. Dateline, right here in Pennsylvania. Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania and other Republicans charged that the Democrats' use of the filibuster to block judicial nominees had radically altered the traditions of the Senate, and that the suggestion that Republicans were trying to break the rules was, quote, remarkable hubris. The audacity of some members to stand up and say, "How dare you break this rule," Santorum said. "It's the equivalent of Adolf Hitler in 1942 saying, 'I'm in Paris, how dare you invade me? How dare you bomb my city? It's mine.'" In early March, Senator Robert Byrd linked the threat by Republicans to use the majority to bar judicial filibusters to the Nazis' use of majority power to push through their agenda in the 1930s. Santorum then called on Byrd to retract his remarks, saying that the words lessened the credibility of the senator and the decorum of the Senate. Now, this week, Santorum issued his own clarification, saying that his reference to Hitler was, quote, meant to dramatize the principle of an argument, not to characterize my Democratic colleagues. Nonetheless, it was a mistake, and I meant no offense. And another Holocaust apology. Bernard Kilpatrick apologized this week for likening a rumor that Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick threw a wild party to Nazi propaganda. Quote, "On Tuesday, I made a reference to the Holocaust that I realized in retrospect was ill-advised and inappropriate," Kilpatrick, the mayor's father, said in a written statement released this week. "I regret making those remarks." Meanwhile, on an issue of a genocide more nearly current, Rwandan Defense Minister General Marcel Gatsinzi this week apologized to his country for not having had the courage to separate himself from the government that presided over the 1994 genocide. Gatsinzi briefly served as Army Chief of Staff at the start of the genocide. He then went to represent the government at several ceasefire meetings and at peace talks. An estimated 1 million ethnic Tutsis and moderate Hutus were killed by extremist Hutus during the 94 genocide. I had no courage to separate myself from a government that was clearly killing innocent people, Gatsinzi told a semi-traditional court gathering at a football stadium in Rwanda. I ask for forgiveness from all Rwandans. He maintained he had not played any part in the killings. He is likely to stand trial for genocide next year. A Northern Kentucky home builder will serve nearly 4 years in prison for diverting into his private business close to $5 million in cash meant to pay off mortgages on new homes. Chester Culkin, 65 years old, was sentenced to 46 months in prison. His wife was sentenced to 2 months and 8 months of home incarceration. During his hearing, Calkins took responsibility for the fraud, saying he was trying to hold together his business, Homes by Calkins. He apologized to his family and friends who packed the courtroom and apologized to the banks and homeowners who were defrauded. I'm convinced it was my false pride, he told the judge. You know I did wrong. I am sorry for that. The judge said the fraud was more than a meager attempt to hold together a failing business. It didn't happen once or twice to tide the company over a rough period. The judge said it happened 47 times between November 1999 and December 2002 to the tune of $4.8 million. But who's counting? Some Hispanic advocates this week called on the administration of Governor Robert Ehrlich of Nevada to eject the leader of a panel that nominates trial judges after he used a slur on his website. Ehrlich's office condemned the remarks, but aides weren't saying if William G. Duval Jr. will be allowed to remain chairman of the 13-member panel that nominates trial judges in three counties in Nevada. The remarks by Ehrlich, by Duval, a retired attorney, commenting on a proposal to use a former boot camp as a facility for women detained by federal immigration authorities. Quote, now it wants to turn the place into a warehouse for illegal female wetbacks, he wrote. Unquote. On Tuesday, he initially used his blog to defend his posting, saying the term is a slur only in the eyes of the beholder. Later that day, he filed a post saying he emphatically apologized to any and all who may have been personally offended by my posts. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, Dateline Fort Hood, Texas, Army Specialist Sabrina Harmon stood before the jury in the sentencing phase of her court-martial this week and tearfully apologized for mistreating Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib. That's right, a bad apple apologizes. Quote, as a soldier, I failed in my duties and in my mission, she said, her voice cracking. Not only did I let down the people in Iraq, I let down every single soldier that serves today, unquote. She was convicted on 6 of the 7 charges he faced for her role in the mistreatment of Iraqi prisoners in 2003. She appeared in several of the most notorious photos taken at Abu Ghraib, including the one of naked Iraqis piled up in a pyramid. But the razor blades under them got sharper, so I don't know what the... Among other things, she was found guilty of taking part in an incident in which a hooded Iraqi was threatened with electrocution and photographed standing on a box and holding wires. The charges carry up to 5 years in prison. The apology of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And speaking of bad apples, a leaked report on a military investigation into two killings of detainees at a U.S. prison in Afghanistan produces new evidence of connivance of senior officers. The apple trees, you might say, in systematic prisoner abuse. The investigation shows the military intelligence officers in charge of the detention center at Bagram Airport were redeployed to Abu Ghraib in Iraq in 2003 while still under investigation for the deaths of two detainees months earlier. Despite military prosecutors' recommendations, the officers involved have yet to be charged, though about 4 or 5 low-ranking soldiers have been. Yeah, the Army will pay for your education, all right. The Bagram case also suggests that some of the prison guards were given little, if any, training in handling detainees and were influenced by a White House directive that, quote, terrorist suspects did not deserve Geneva Convention rights, even though one of the prisoners who died in their care was, according to an eyewitness, believed by all involved to be innocent just before they administered a beating that resulted, allegedly, in his death. Those bad apples, ladies and gentlemen, there are just so very few of them, even though there seem to be more and more every day. Now, we seem to be coming to the end of the Michael Jackson trial. Larry King wasn't allowed to testify. And apparently Deepak Chopra, who was on the defense witness list originally, is not going to be testifying at the trial. Just here.
Yo, testifying in the trial of Mickey J. I'm Deepak. Mystifying your day, getting you spiritualized through spiritualize and sending it all to your cellular phone. I'm waiting, not hating, mega meditating. I'm with you right now, and I'm all alone. That's a paradox, like timeless clocks, like egg laying cocks, if you know what I mean. I tune out the mental static, I'm the mind's Vegematic, and you'll always find me at the hip scene. So serene at the scene, as if my mind's just a screen, and I'm its projector. Caveat lector, and there is no keener specter than a mountain of green. Cut a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify. Cut a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify. At La Costa, you can come see me. Nothing seamy or unseemly, just gentle yoga and sashimi, golf and tennis, and hints of a gangster past. Now the place is less exciting than a Lutheran fast. I practice perfect health and I offer perfect weight. Tell your mind to sate and your body will follow. Visualize yourself as hollow, that would be six pills. But think of all the money I've saved you on pills. Cut a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify. Cut a lot of huts for natural serenity. Here's where you insert your favorite obscenity. Very pleased to be insanity's enemy. Deepakify, Deepakify.
Ladies and gentlemen, stand by for the Harper's Magazine riots, following close on the heels of the Newsweek Magazine riots. Posted on the Harper's website this past Wednesday, excerpts from an interview with a 21-year-old Afghan man, whose name is withheld for his protection, conducted last summer in the town of Gardez by an American human rights researcher. The interviewee was upset when his interrogators placed a copy of the Quran into a latrine. He showed his interviewer a Department of Defense discharge letter saying that he was detained from December 2002 through May 2004. This already appeared in Harper's Magazine in March of this year, where it was, I guess, ignored by Afghan rioters. Says the interviewee, there were eight of us. They took us to Gardez, where we were taken to jail. We were masked with some type of bag put over our heads. Our hands were tied. They poured cold water over us and then started beating us with their fists and with sticks. Sometimes they picked us up on their shoulders and then threw us down. They were all American soldiers wearing uniforms. They untied dogs and they frightened us with them. The dogs bit us and scratched us with teeth and nails. They didn't give us anything to eat or drink. We were held there for 7 or 8 nights, and each night we were tortured. We were not so sad when we were tortured, but when they insulted Islam, it was really very difficult. They would come into the cell and search our belongings. They would pick up the Holy Quran and go through it page by page like they were looking for something. Then they would throw the Holy Quran on the ground or drop it in the latrine. Bad apples, ladies. Just a few bad, just, you know, people improvising because it wasn't, you know, why would you know that that was something to do to get guys upset if you were badly trained or poorly trained or none untrained or whatever? They're all lying. They're all telling us the same story. It's made up by Osama bin Laden while he's on the run. Or not. Can't tell you, ladies and gentlemen, but I just know that I guess not as many Afghan rioters read Harper's as Newsweek is the only conclusion you can really credibly draw from all this. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as we're reviewing some of the events of the past 6 months, the year almost half over, apropos of the Newsweek riots, so-called, well, I'm calling them that, so-called by me, White House press spokesman Scott McClellan lectured Newsweek early and often this week on what they had to do to repair the damage caused by their reporting that the Quran had been flushed by American interrogators attempting to dismay their detainees with insults for their religion. He said that Newsweek had to do more to show the positive side of whatever. It was almost as if Scott McClellan now knew the answer to a question that a couple of months ago he didn't know, when he was asked, why was Jeff Gannon, real name James Guckert, former male escort, allowed into the White House on a daily pass every day for 2 years to ask questions at the White House press briefing? McClellan evinced ignorance of the whole idea of defining what a journalist was or is. We don't do that, he said. We I guess he would add this week, we know what they're supposed to do when they do bad. But he did seem to be at the time in need of some clarification on the question of what is a journalist?
What is a journalist? He's a hard-drinking, soft-spoken, burn-up-some-shoe-leather, but sit-on-his-hiney sort of son of a gun, or daughter of a gun, who's seen it all before and can't wait to see it all again. A journalist is someone who gets shot at in a war zone so that he can report back material that can't be broadcast because it might be too disturbing. A journalist is someone who reads teleprompter better than anybody and writes better than the guy who just won the Pulitzer. Journalists like deadlines, bylines, a bigger news hole, free food. Journalists don't like deadlines, editors, cramped press facilities at major news events, media whores. Journalists like to know, how does it feel? And what's the mood here? Journalists don't like to know how the Social Security system really works. A journalist is often found at news conferences, presidential visits, crime scenes, hospice vigils, and the sites of major recent snowfalls. A journalist is seldom found advertising his services on a website for gay escorts. Journalists sometimes make too much money getting out of the studio too seldom, so they can mingle with other journalists who are resentful because they never get into the studio at all. Journalists can be anchors, but never sales. They can be reporters or just repeaters. A journalist looks down on celebrities until the day he becomes one. A journalist spends too much time covering a story that gets too little space so it can be skimmed by a reader with too little time. Journalists can't resist miracle puppies, children trapped in wells, killer bees. Journalists almost always resist stories with three or more sides, computer terminals without a Nexus account, angles that might make their colleagues think they're flaky. A journalist will fly halfway around the world to stand where a tsunami took place, and he'll stand in freezing rain for 2 hours to point out that it's winter time. Journalists are more curious than anybody, attacked by everybody, and lent money by nobody. A journalist will share a quote, but won't reveal a source. A journalist thinks the First Amendment is the only one the founders really meant. What is a journalist? A journalist is someone who earned pretty good money telling us what was really going on in the world until he realized he could earn better money by telling us about the social lives of the people who earn really great money, telling us fairy tales about the world. A journalist knows who's got the best Rolodex, who's got the best satellite phone circuits, how much backlight he needs. A journalist doesn't know where to find Kyrgyzstan on a map, where to find the smart people in a small town, how you're supposed to fit a 5-minute story into a 90-second hole. A journalist is just like the rest of us, except he's more tenacious, lazier, sloppier, got better hair, and does his best work in the comfort of the herd. What is a journalist? Next time you see one, just ask him, how does it feel?
Ladies and gentlemen, this has never happened before. The Defense Department may have overestimated China's total military spending by more than two-thirds, according to a report for the Air Force released this week by the RAND Corporation. Estimated China's military spending totaled $31 to $38 billion in 2003. By contrast, the Defense Department put the 2003 figure as high as $65 billion. RAND's figures could raise some questions about some of the arguments used by U.S. decision-makers to justify continued spending on big-ticket weapon systems. Oh, no, it can't. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of the show from Philadelphia. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived on your computer whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, podcast from kcrw.com, available as a free download from audible.com/LeShow, and on channel 108 at Sirius Satellite Radio, home of Opie and Anthony. And it would be just like our figures on China's defense spending being accurate if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks for help with today's broadcast. And thanks to Chris at WXPN here in Philly for his assistance as well. Le Show playlist is available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.